What's up, Knoll Nation? I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We are Plant the Spear, and we're excited to be back in the studio with you guys. We have a lot to talk about. Obviously, everybody knows what happened on Saturday. Some good, some bad. Florida State moves to 11-0, but what now? What is in store for the Knolls going forward? Obviously, there's going to be a huge change in the whole operation when you talk about handing the keys now to Tate Rodemaker with Jordan's injury. And so there's a lot to talk about. And obviously, we got it's rivalry week. We got Florida coming up. That preview is going to come on Wednesday, but we got a lot of ground to cover. So first off, Michael, how are you? Thank you for joining me today to talk about FSU.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Jesse, for having me again. I'm here. We're making it. You know, I was telling you in the pre-show, like, it feels like we're talking about somebody's funeral and no one died, but it's just, you know, just the emotions from what we all experienced on Saturday, watching Jordan go down. You know, I was there at the stadium and, man, I'm gonna tell you what, I've never been somewhere where in one moment 70,000 people are screaming their lungs off to another moment you could literally, I hate the saying, but it's actually very true, you could literally hear a pin drop. That's how quiet that stadium got when everybody recognized that Jordan was down. So, you know, man, that's life. That's football. It's the sport we love so much. And, you know, all wishes and prayers to Jordan and his family. You know, he's an incredible human being. And, you know, just I'm grateful for what he did for Florida State through the muck and the mire, getting us help being one of the reasons why Florida State is even in the playoff conversation. So, you know, Jordan, if you're watching, if your family's watching this, man, just know that here at Plant the Spear, man, we got you in our thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, and I think you summed it up well in the post-game video that you sent me, that this is just a bittersweet win. Like, you're happy to be at 11-0, but it came at a cost. And this was one thing where it was just an absolute nightmare scenario. I mean, you thought last game in Doak for Jordan to come out and just kind of have a going-away party, so to speak, even though the season, you know, is far from over. You got a lot to play for, but it was his last game in Doak after a long career. And this is just the absolute way you did not want it to end. Yeah. And, you know, that brings me to, like, I will say when you talk about this, you know, Jordan, when you saw, of course, it's always bad when it happens over something like this. But, like, if you want to gauge the impact that Jordan Travis has had on Florida State, the college football world in general, just this university and this team and this program.
Yeah.
The amount of, like, just love and you know, just support for Jordan Travis, you know, like we talked about, of course, you had some turd heads from the other fan bases that were trying to poke fun at the injury, which, you know, you can take a long walk off a short cliff if you're one of those type of people. But
and let me say this, Jesse, real quick. Sorry to interrupt you. Let me say this real quick. If those fan bases, those fans from those fan bases, because we all know every fan base has their fans that you just want to put somewhere else. We can't be that. And I know that there were Florida State fans who, after Emory Williams, the quarterback from Miami, broke his arms, got on Facebook or social media and made fun of that. That's terrible. That's despicable. And if you're a fan of Florida State and you do that, you're not a true fan of Florida State. We don't want you in our fandom. Like, because what you're doing is now what's being done to Jordan. And it's absolutely terrible. I just had to say that.
Right. And you have to remember that. At the end of the day, rivalries get heated. Teams, you know, I don't like anything about Miami or Florida, but these are kids, man. These are still human beings. They have families. They have dreams. They have aspirations. And, you know, you never want to see somebody get injured,
right?
You know, no matter who they play for. And so, obviously, like we said, best prayers and well wishes to Jordan, to Graham Mertz, and to the kid from Miami, you know, Emory Williams, to heal up and you know, come back stronger than ever. But I really just do think that, you know, to take a few minutes and just hand Jordan his flowers from, like, us personally, that, you know, you talk about a guy who stuck with this program, who wanted to quit the receiver position or wanted to switch to receiver, wanted to quit football at times.
Right.
And now he comes in and he becomes a Heisman contender and he leads this program. You know, obviously there was a lot of hands, you know, in the pushing this program back to where they're at. It wasn't just Jordan Travis, but he was really the cornerstone for getting this program back to where it was, his development, his leadership. And, you know, when you talk about the definition of a teammate, I don't think you can find a better example of a guy who has been a great teammate, has been a leader in the locker room, has done great on and off the field, and is truly just a good all-around person. I mean, I have never seen Jordan Travis in a situation where he was not humble. Correct. He was not grateful for everything. He was not thankful for everything. He's even taking this in stride, as hard as it has to be. He's sent out a few well wishes to say that he's doing okay, but I'm sure when the camera's off, it's got to be heartbreaking.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And, absolutely.
You know, I didn't talk about this a whole lot throughout the season because, you know, people deserve their privacy, but like my season tickets just happened to be right next to Jordan's family.
That's right.
And so like I had a few games to get to know them, and it's just it's a really awesome group of people, that the entire family, from Devin to his aunts to his mother, and just everybody that I've had a chance to interact with throughout the season. Just a great group of people. And you know, my heart really breaks for Jordan Travis as a person, not just Florida State. You know, right. Like you said, man, it's crazy because like you don't get emotional a lot of times over a football injury. You know, things happen. Yeah. That's part of the game. But like, man, when I went back and just watched the replay, like I almost teared up because it was like, man, you have come to love, and we put so much investment into this team. It's a very likable team, not like years ago. And just to see that they're like their leader, their unsung hero.
Yeah,
to go down in that fashion, it's heartbreaking, man. And I really hate it for Jordan Travis. And like you said, prayers to him and his family during his time. And, you know, the thing is about Jordan, man, like he's down, but he's not out.
Right.
He's not going to play anymore. That's put out today. Like Florida State put out a graphic. He's done for the season. His career at Florida State is over. But I promise you, as soon as they get that leg back to where he can be out of that hospital, he's going to be on the sideline. He's going to be in the meeting rooms. He's going to be coaching up Tate, because he was the first one to say, like, the job's not done. I mean, you can be sad for me all you want, but the season is not over. Correct. And that's the type of leader that Jordan is. And that's one of his biggest characteristics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just going back to what you said about emotions, you know, when he took off, and I've rewatched that play, I don't know, 20 times, just because I was just trying to figure out why did we run that play?
Yep.
And it was a read option. So it wasn't that, you know, I know there's some people out there blaming, you know, Mike Norvell on the play call. It wasn't that he felt desperate to have to run Jordan Travis. It was a read option. It was a normal play call. Jordan saw the opening and Jordan took off. Okay. Let's just make that clear. Jordan saw the opening and Jordan kept the ball and ran. And the tackle, you know, the hip drop tackle, I hate it. It needs to be banned. It's basically a horse collar tackle. You know, that kid felt terrible for what had happened. But when it happened, as soon as it happened, I remember Jesse, because I was obviously watching the play intently. And as soon as it happened, he went down. I felt in that moment, I was like, ooh, that didn't look right. And then everybody was getting up and the crowd was cheering, and I just did not cheer. I was like, something's wrong. And then he patted to his leg, and then I could see it. I could see his ankle just not bent. And I literally sat down, and you said you almost had tears going back and watch it. I don't care. I'll admit it. I cried. Like sat there and I cried because I was like, oh my gosh, his season's done. Right. And I just felt devastated. I had a fan next to me because I just kept saying, oh, that's the season. And this fan next to me said, come on, man, like this guy's hurt. Like you can't be thinking about the season. And I said, no, I'm sorry. Like I'm thinking about Jordan's season. I'm thinking about FSU season. I'm thinking about Jordan's season. Like it's done. It's over.
Right.
Like you may not know it right now, but it's done.
Like I can't think of a more just gut-wrenching, unfair end to a player's story than this. Yeah. Like you have a guy who stuck through the mud and the muck, who got this program back to, you know, had a big hand in getting this program back to where it was. And you have really four and a half games left in your career. And it goes out like that. And so it really just does. I mean, it wrenches at your gut, and it really makes you so sad because, you know, again, this is a team that's very likable. He's a player that is loved by this fan base, loved by college football. I mean, you saw, you know, so many people from this fan base, from other fan bases, from national college football analysts, everyone just showing support for Jordan, because I think people really do appreciate not only the player that he was, but the person that he was and how he went about things. And so it is really sad to see, you know, things come to an end like that. But I know Jordan's going to have a big influence on things going forward. He's going to still continue to lead this team. So it's terrible to see things go like that. But, you know, Florida State, that's the thing about football is, like, as bad as that is, the games are still going to come down the line. You don't have time to dwell on it. I do want to touch on one more thing before we kind of get into what's next for Florida State. And I do want to say that most of you guys who listen to this probably follow us on social media, so you're probably aware of the situation. We did not do a show last week. We did not have a big presence on social media last week. We didn't put out any articles last week. That was, I needed a few days. I was dealing with a personal loss, and I just needed a few days to get my mind right. But I want to, and this is something that speaks to what we saw on Saturday night with Jordan Travis. You know, I'm just a small-time podcaster. I'm not the quarterback of the number four football team in the country, but the amount of people that came out, I mean, hundreds of comments that just showed support when I had posted that I needed some time away because of what had happened. And just, I just want to say thank you, a true heartfelt thank you to everybody who took the time out of their day to show love and support. And it just really means a lot. And when, and you know, when you see what happened on Saturday, you just really realize that, like, this is a really tight-knit fan base. This is really a family-oriented fan base. And a lot of that has to do with the team that you like, that you can root for, you know, the leadership that we have in place right now. But that, from me personally, I just want to say thank you to everybody for that, because it really does mean a lot. And we do this for you guys. I mean, this is a hobby for us. This is not a full-time job. You know, we're the little guys. We can't get media passes. You know, it's like after I dealt with the personal loss, and it was like the ACC turned us down on that. So it's like, you know, we do this for you guys. This is truly what it's about. This is a show for the fans, built for you guys. You support us. You support the sponsors and all that stuff. And so I just, again, I want to give a heartfelt thank you to everybody who reached out. And I'm ready to jump in, man. I'm ready to get back into things, because I think that does help heal wounds. And it's Florida weekend, so you got to get back on the bandwagon.
Yeah. Well, let me say this real quick, Jesse, before we just move on to this. You know, and I'll speak for the rest of the Plant the Spear Nation here. Is that, man, we're incredibly grateful for you, just your willingness to endeavor to sacrifice the hours, time, relational capacities, all those things. To provide, you know, some of the best Florida State content out there in the social media world and culture we live in today. And so your willingness to do the hard work, to do the graphics, to get the articles, to do the research, to put the shows on, to talk to people, make connections, work with sponsors, come up with this incredible site, and even to allow this random dude that messaged you on Twitter to connect and see if you needed any help and allow me to come on the show and to be a part of this beautiful thing, man. Like, when you told me what you were going through, it was like, absolutely, man, take all the time you need. This fan base is going to be here for you. That's what Florida State is best known for, man. We rally around our people. And so just from the bottom of my heart and on representation of Plant the Spirit Nation, man, thank you. And we're so glad that you had the chance to get away and grieve for a bit, and that you're back. And just wanted to say thank you.
I appreciate that, man. I really do. And like, someone's cutting onions in the background or whatever. So it'd be nice to talk about football, but I really do appreciate that, because, you know, it's just when you have things like that, it's like you can't plan for anything. And so it sometimes you just need time. And unfortunate as it was, like, I was able to get to it happened right before the Miami game. I went down there. It was fun. It was a good distraction. But then when you come home, you know, life is waiting for you. And sometimes that is tough. And so, you know, obviously, like I said, I really appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody else out there as well for the support. So it really does mean a lot, you know, and it really did help me through that. But yeah, man, I'm ready to get back to it. So,
all right, Florida.
Let's talk about, let's go through, and like we told you guys, the Florida preview is going to be on Wednesday, and we know this is a huge game coming up for Florida State, because every game's huge now, because you are fighting and clawing for that playoff spot, and obviously it's a rivalry game, so you want to win. So what the theme of this show is now, we're going to talk a little bit about what we saw in the North Alabama game, just some things that maybe Florida State, you know, you got to get better about a few things. That game wasn't pretty, but you turned it on at the end. You pulled away. So we'll talk about a few things about that game. And then where does Florida State go from here when you talk about Tate at quarterback? And what does the road ahead look for you when you talk about playoff pictures and things like that? So when we talk about this North Alabama game, man, like, I was out of town. I was at some family's house watching it. So I was kind of like at the dinner table, kind of, you know, cutting eyes at the TV. And I'm like, I'm like, y'all, I'm not even, I've lost my appetite.
I can't eat right now.
I'm not even hungry anymore. Like, this is ridiculous. And so, like, yeah, man, I mean, you get down 13-0 to a 3-win FCS team, and you really just start to feel like that. And then Jordan gets hurt, and you're just like, this is just, it had Jacksonville State vibes all over again.
Oh, man.
You know, until they went on the run, I was like, man, like, I feel confident if Mike Norvell goes in to play the number one team in the country. The big games, they seem ready for. But, man, FCS teams, I was like, they are just a kryptonite. And so you got a little worried there. But I think when you look back at things, you feel not so bad about what happened early in that game, because you realize, and it's something that the broadcast team talked about, was North Alabama's like the top trick play team in the country. And you know that a lot of their plays that got them to that 13-0 lead had to do with trick plays. You saw the fake punt, you saw the reverse and things like that. And so you don't really feel as bad about what happened. Now, I think at the same time, you gave some film to other people. Like, you're going to have to do better against those trick plays, because now you got a team like Florida who's fighting for bowl eligibility. They got nothing to lose at this point. Right. They could pick up on some of that too. But I think when you go back and you look, like, Florida State went on a 58-0 run in that game. And Michael, I'm going to tell you what, there's been a lot of satisfying plays in Florida State football history. You know, you talk about winning a national championship or whatever. I don't think there was a play that's been more satisfying in my time as an FSU fan than that kickoff, or the extra point, or the field goal, excuse me, that got blocked and returned for a touchdown. I was like, are you really about to do this? And then I was like, man, block it. Just shove their face in the dirt and block it. And then they return it for a touchdown, and they're running down the field, and I'm just like, sucker. You know what I mean? Like, so that was the most satisfying play I've seen. But like I said, man, I think overall Florida State, they got off to a rough start with some trick plays that got them, but then they found their groove and they dominated.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Sorry, I got something in my throat. Here's the thing. As we told you guys before, we're pretty positive fan site here. We try to keep it pretty positive, but you know, we'll call a duck a duck. And so this is no offense to JT. I know, you know, he's injured. We gave him his flowers. We love JT. It's all about that. But you start the game off 13-0. I mean, I think you told me in the pre-show they had 23 yards of offense.
Yep.
In that first quarter with JT in there. I mean, passes were, you know, there one that should have been picked, one was off the mark. Offensive line was just letting people run just free, like it's a shopping spree at Target or something. Defense eyes were all in the wrong place. If there was a game where they are a beginning of saying they came out flat, this was that. They came out absolutely flat. And yes, Northern Alabama, they're the number one trick play team in the country. They talked about it. Like, this is how they try to win games. They trick play you to death early so that you get behind deeply, and then they try to run their normal offense to keep you off the field. Fortunately enough for Florida State, as soon as they started running that normal offense, or every time they would run a normal play, Florida State would get a tackle for loss on them. It was just those trick plays. And they had I've never seen so many trick plays run in a row in my entire life. Holy cow. It was trick play after trick play after trick play after trick play. The whole swinging offensive line where you have
the
guards all the way at the ends of each other, split the boundary side and the field side. It was like, this is ridiculous. So again, you know, this is on the coaches for allowing them to, you know, I know Mike Norvell talked about having a great week of practice and all like that stuff, but they came out flat. So it's on you, coaches. They came out flat. And then the players not taking it seriously. I mean, they should have known that this team had nothing to lose. They're going to come out and play with their hairs on fire. And so, but like you said, they, you know, after the JT injury, after Tate gets in there, gets settled down, they go on a 58-0 run. And I've seen more satisfying plays. You know, I think of the Kermit Whitfield 100-yard kickoff return in the national championship. But what was the most satisfying play of this season was definitely that block field goal return. I was in the stadium. Second to that, though, I think was really important was the Lawrence Taua Fili run. Because the 2013 national title team came out and celebrated with him. Because at that moment in the stadium, even when we got the score, I think when we scored, when we made it 13-10, even when we got that touchdown, like, it was almost like the stadium felt like it couldn't celebrate. We just witnessed Jordan Travis getting hurt. And it was just this really awkward feeling like, yay, we scored a touchdown. Okay. So having Taua Fili come out and score, and then having that 2013 championship team come and like go bonkers, you were almost like, oh, it's okay to still like celebrate. And the stadium went nuts.
Yeah,
for that moment. And so I think those two were probably the most impactful scores I've witnessed this season.
Yeah, I think it's just like when you talk about that. I mean, you know, it wasn't on purpose, but you just instantly hate North Alabama for that.
If I see that coach again.
Right. But, you know, here's the thing, man. Like, we talked about, I know we didn't do a show last week, but we talked off air like 2 weeks ago. And the thing is, like, man, this is why I hate these games. I absolutely hate these games. There's so much to lose and there's nothing to gain. Like, if you beat North Alabama 100-0, nobody gets injured. Nobody cares. You don't get anything for it. But in this game, you lost your Heisman hopeful quarterback. You were down 13-0. So now everybody's going to go, oh, well, you were down 13-0. Like, people are going to remember that more than they're going to remember that you won 58-13.
Right.
And, you know, this is true, man. This is why I said, like, I told you 2 weeks ago where I was like, I don't care. If I'm Mike Norvell, I'm sending all my starters out there for one snap. I'm letting them take a knee and they're out of the game the rest of the game. I don't care if we win this game by 20 points. I don't want to end up having a Derwin James, Charleston Southern type of situation. Yep. And that's exactly what happened. That's why I hate these games, like I said, because there's just nothing really to gain and there's so much to lose. So, you know, I would not have even had him on the field if it were me. But I understand he wanted to let him go out in front of a sold-out Doak Campbell Stadium with his family in attendance and have a big night. He mentioned that in a pregame speech. Ah, man, it's just these are the ones that hurt. And I will say, you know, just to wrap up that UNA game where we talk about where Florida State's going to go from this going forward. Again, you talk about Florida State went on a 58-0 run. Their success rate was 51% to UNA's 25%. Your yards per play was at 7.8. North Alabama was at 3.5. Explosive play rate, 13-3%. So you dominated them outside of the couple of trick plays that they broke off. Yeah. And I mean, they made a couple of good plays. Like the first touchdown they got where the guy caught it on Renardo Green in the end zone. Like that was just a really freaking good throw and catch.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And that guy also, they were talking about it on when I watched the rewatch, like he's like their all time leader in touchdowns. He's a senior. So like
has he got another year eligibility? Cause we got scholarship waiting for him at Florida State.
They said he had like a red shirt in his pocket that he could use if he wanted to come back. So it's like, you know, maybe, but again, you talk about how, like when you look at going forward, again, you talk about how this was not a great performance to open up, but you ran away with things. You got outgained 134-42 in the first quarter. That was really not good. But then again, you come back and you, this is what the broadcast says, you outgained them 458-65 yards in the final three quarters, went on a 58-0 run. That's total domination. So it unfortunately took the situation that happened to wake the team up because it felt like you said, it felt like they come out flat. It felt like they just, is it Florida week yet? You know what I mean? We can just roll the helmet out there and win. And once they woke up, they played with a new fire. And I think that's a fire that you have to play with going forward because you're going to need everybody to step up.
Yep.
It wasn't perfect in this. You gave up some rushing yards that I didn't really like. You allowed some pressure. You allowed seven quarterback hurries and two sacks. But again, there were some little mistakes in there. Like when you talk about Renardo Green in the same sentence where we said he gave up the touchdown, like he had an incredible pick on the sideline. Yeah. It gets negated by a penalty. So you go from a turnover to a first down for UNA. The next play, they get a 28-yard gain on a trick play.
You're right.
So it's like you were so close to just shutting the door on them, but then you kept giving them little hopes. And so this game was dominant by Florida State once they woke up. And the reason I bring up the yardage in this one, you know, again, we are not here to diminish what Jordan Travis has done. He is the one that got us to 11-0. I equated this earlier when we were talking in the pre-show. I feel like with whatever happens going forward, and we're going to talk about going forward here in just a minute, but man, this is going to, if Florida State does anything besides win the national championship with Tate at quarterback, I feel like everybody's going to have that feeling, that gut feeling in the back of their mind or whatever, where you're like, this is the same as 2020 Florida State basketball Coach Hamilton, where you felt like you were in a really good position to go on and win a national championship. And now, if you do anything besides win a national championship, you're going to feel like you're always going to wonder what could have been. And I just bring up the yardage. Like I said, it's not a diss against Jordan, but some people are going to be like, can you move the ball with Tate at quarterback? I mean, again, they had 23 yards at that point when Jordan got injured, and then they ended up going on a 458, you know, almost 500-yard run there with Tate at quarterback. So, and of course, you know, you had Brock Glenn in late in the game too, but they moved the ball. And so now – you get the dominant win. You're 11-0. your trajectory has changed. You've hit a fork in the road. It's time to adapt and adjust. And like you said, it's football, man. People get injured. It's next man up. It just happens to be you lost a Heisman hopeful at the most important position in college football. So that is what makes this not just losing anybody.
Right.
But, you know, let's talk about going forward with Tate at quarterback. Why we think this can be successful, this offense can be successful. Because I think right now, like we talked about in the pre-show, is it's a two-game season right now. Because if you don't win the next two games, the playoffs don't even matter. We already felt like Florida State. If you dropped one game, you were in trouble. Now with a backup quarterback, you've given them an excuse to do some funky stuff. But it really boils down to a one game at a time season. You have to just win the game that's in front of you. And you just really need to see everybody rally around Tate. The thing with Tate is, in my opinion, what you lose from Jordan is a quarterback who has been in the system a long time. He has just absolute control of this offense. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't get rattled in big games. He's Joe Cool. But when you and I love you guys. Don't clip this. Don't flame me for social media on this. I'm just giving my honest opinion here. Jordan Travis, as much as we love him, as great as he is, he's not an elite thrower of the football. When you talk about his entire package, he's a pardon my French, he's a damn good quarterback.
Yeah.
He is one of the most elite running quarterbacks in all of college football. He has complete command of this offense. But when you talk about just the passing ability, and that's something that you brought up and something that we talked about in the pre-show, when you looked at the North Alabama game, the one game should have almost been picked. The other one missed Johnny by 15 yards.
Yes.
I think Tate can make the throws. It's just he doesn't have the experience. So can he handle the moment? But I think that if you have everybody step around him and you can keep him upright, and I got some pressure numbers I'll share in a second, I think that Tate can still run this passing offense the way you need it to.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, again, the thing is, like, with Jordan, he is an exceptional college quarterback. He's an exceptional college quarterback. He has complete command of this offense. He is like Mike Norvell's brain on the field.
Exactly.
He can make the throws. We're not saying he can't make the throws. He can make those throws. He can make them really well at times. And he knows just where to put the ball. But when you're talking about a pure passer, and this has been a thing for Jordan since he came to Florida State, even at Louisville. When you're talking about a pure passer, everyone would recognize he's not a pure passer. And what you saw out of Tate Rodemaker during that game, I mean, I just go back to the throw he made to Keon. It was a front shoulder, I think it was like 20 yards, just rocket to Keon. And I mean, it was placed right in the perfect position for Keon to go up and get it. Now, Keon was, 7 yards open, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a beautiful ball. I mean, the receivers, I know Kyle Morlock had a drop and the crowd like booed because it was a bad drop. But like the thing that I was thinking to myself is like, well, they're probably not used to the ball being on them like that because Jordan has more of a soft kind of throw. Even when he rockets it in, it comes in, differently. Whereas Tate, when he rockets, I mean, it's a rocket.
It's got some zip on it.
It got some zip on it. So it got there faster than what they were used to. So all we're saying is that Tate gives you a different dimension that maybe Jordan didn't necessarily have. What is a negative, what is a massive concern for Tate is he doesn't have command of this offense. This offense was built around Jordan, right? Now, one of the things that Mike Norvell is a brilliant genius, a mad scientist at, is that if you go back and look at his days at Memphis, he builds the offense around his quarterback. So you have to imagine that this week they're going to be game planning around Tate's strength. They're going to put plays in that Tate is more comfortable with. They're going to take plays out that Tate is not as comfortable with. They're going to make sure that Keon, that Johnny, that Bell, that Morlock, that Hill, all those guys, they're going to get opportunities to make plays. You're probably going to see a lot more max protection and when we do shots. You're going to see shots. This will probably, I will imagine that this offense will look more like it looked last year when it was just Johnny was the main deep threat. You'll probably see that a lot. Keon will probably be more underneath stuff, more like let's get him into open space and see what he can do, whereas Johnny's going to be your back shoulder, your deep shot stuff. Likely. There's a likelihood of that. You're also going to see more probably, I would imagine that they would get away from counter. I don't know why they keep running it. They cannot run it well this year. What I would imagine is you'll probably see is a little bit more inside zone. If you don't know what that means, it's just the linemen's coming up and just blocking whoever's is in their zone, and either dual or split back or dual, which is like, you know, they double team and then they take the hole. Miami ran that a lot against us and had a lot of success. So you'll probably see a lot of that with Tate, I would imagine. And I just think that's what we're talking about. We're not trying to talk negative about Jordan. We think Jordan is an incredible quarterback. We think Jordan has the arm, has the skill set, all those things. But you're just going to get a more pure passer with Tate. Now, the thing that worries me the most, Jesse, and we talked about this in the pre-show, is not necessarily Tate's command of the offense. I think he'll be able to figure it out if Mike sets him up and gives him some easy throws early on. He'll be able to get comfortable. My thing is that dude literally has the pocket awareness of a pocket square. Like, I mean, there were so many times where like a, you know, 280-pound defensive lineman is literally breathing on his neck and he's just like Joe Cool, like, I'll throw it when I want to. And we're like, throw the ball.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. Like, I mean, he took a couple of sacks in that game that they just were not necessary. Just what are you doing?
Right.
Like you said, he's good for at least one to two. What in the world? Yeah. Per game. And so that's my only concern. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can make the pocket presence work, like I do like that he's able to keep his eyes down the field, even under pressure, but yeah, you just worry about strip sacks and things like that if you don't feel that. And while we know Jordan didn't run the ball a whole lot this season, and you know, when you clamor for a guy to run more, that's
what happens.
That's what happens. And so, you know, that's why I said all season long, the best ability is availability. And I don't care if he runs because I don't want him to get hurt. And now that it happened, you know, but if you talk about Tate and his pocket presence, it's like, you just got to be careful with the ball. Like that was the thing that Jordan was so elite at, not necessarily running, but it's just a scrambling. Like, he was elite as a runner. He just didn't run it a lot. But his ability to avoid pressure and turn what would be a 4-yard sack into a 40-yard run, that's what made Jordan so special. And I do think you have to understand, too, now that Tate is a mobile guy. Like, he's athletic for being his size. I saw a video today where like he threw the ball, bounced it off the goalpost, and then turned like a backflip, which is impressive for a guy his size. Like he's not scared to run the ball. He did have a couple good runs in that game. And, you know, when you talk about Jordan too, again, like we said, this is not no knock on Jordan, but he dropped some absolute dimes.
Yes.
But the one knock on Jordan this year has been sometimes the accuracy struggles. And again, you always feel bad saying something because he got injured, but like you said, you're just looking at it through the eyes of replacing Jordan as a quarterback. It is what it is. Like, we love Jordan, but it's just sometimes the accuracy wasn't there. And if Tate can get that, Tate has a good arm. He can throw the ball. We saw some of the beat writers in the past, you know, in the past offseason where they said, you know, he's not a complete package, but as a thrower of the football, he may be better than Jordan. That's something that they said that they've seen.
Oh, yeah, they said that. Yes.
It's just my concern with Tate. Is, and this is one of the things that I thought has been a problem with Florida State's slow starts this season and being able to run away with the second half. He just hasn't played. He just does not have any experience running this offense. We looked it up earlier. I think he has like maybe 30 dropbacks this entire year and 25 of them were in this game. Like, he just does not play. And so the thing with Tate is once he settles in, he seems to be fine. But it's that first few minutes where, like you said, I mean, you just have usually about one a game, and I was happy that we didn't see it in this game, even if it was an FCS game. We're just like, Tate, bro, what are you doing?
What are you talking about? We did see it in this game. It's when he took the sack. It's
like, well, the interception. Like, he will throw it. He will throw it like just to like there was no one even there. What are you doing? And so like, yeah, man, I think that is the thing that you want to avoid with Jordan, especially. Or, I mean, with Tate, especially if you get into like a playoff type situation where you just really can't afford those turnovers, but. I will say the other thing too, and you bringing it up made me think of it too, was something that is going to be different to watch out for with Tate also is, you know, Tate came in against Louisville after Jordan got injured. He came in this game where after Jordan got injured, that was really the two biggest sample sets that he's played as far as games wise. Jordan, I mean, Tate, I'm going to keep saying Jordan. I'm not used to saying Tate yet. Tate. Okay, here we go. But Tate has never had a full week as the planned starter. You know what I mean? Like, he's never had that full week of preparation and practice knowing he's going to start this game. And so I think, like you said, now you can adjust the offense a little bit to his strengths. We know Mike Norvell has been very successful at Memphis in past offenses with mobile quarterbacks and without mobile quarterbacks. Yeah. It's just the thing that we worry about, that like we talked about in a pre-show, was if this would have happened last year, you'd be like, all right, well, we run the ball for 200 yards a game. I think that we can use our running game to overcome this, do just enough, because Tate can make all the throws, but you struggle to run the ball a little bit this year. So you're going to have those guys step up. Now, they had a really good game in this one. We saw Keziah Holmes get involved. We saw CJ Campbell get involved. You saw a lot of guys. Even Sam Singleton had a nice run. Man, that guy looks like he's going to be electric going forward. But this is one where you just got to have everybody step up around Tate, because you got to take the pressure off of him. And I don't necessarily mean pressure in the pocket. You don't want him to have to go in and necessarily win you the game as the quarterback, but you got to keep him upright too. You got to keep the pressure off of him as well. And that's something that, let me just share this real quick and then I'll kick it back to you here. So when you talk about what Tate did against, in the two real games that he's played in, so North Alabama, he went 13-23, 56.5%. His adjusted completion percentage, which accounts for drops and throwaways. And when you have a quarterback, you know, there was two drops in that game that PFF credited. And there was a couple throwaways where you got a guy who's not fully comfortable with the offense. Right. He's going to throw it away a little bit more. I'm fine with that. Be safe with the ball. His adjusted completion percentage was 71.4. So that's pretty good. 217 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, 12% big time throw rate. That's really high. So like I said, he can drop some dimes. Against Louisville in 2022. Now he went 6 of 11, 54.5% completion percentage, 66.7 adjusted, 109 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, 7.1 big time throw rate. So, you know, he can make the throws. But what you got to do with Tate, you got to keep him upright, and you got to keep him as clean of a pocket as you can give him. Because against North Alabama, this is my concern with the offensive line. And again, I know some people came after Atkins after this game. Guys, that's not like he's doing the best he can. We're still getting there talent-wise with this offensive line. We're still getting there health-wise. But Tate was pressured on 36% of dropbacks. That could have a lot to do with his pocket presence. That's fair to say. But when you look at under pressure, he was 1 of 7 for 14 yards with a PFF grade of 28.7. When he was not pressured, 12 of 16, 203 yards, two touchdowns, and a PFF grade of 94.1. So I feel like, Michael, the key to success with Tate, if you can – he takes time to read. He doesn't read as fast as Jordan. Right, but if you can give him the time, he can make all the throws. But if he gets under pressure, things do come unraveled pretty quick.
Yeah. I think so. I think he can, you know, I think one of the things that I heard the broadcast people, when I went back and watched it, one of the things they said is that, you know, one of the good things about Tate is that Tate will actually go through most of his progressions, whereas Jordan would probably look at first and second and key off of those two. Right. And we've seen that where there will be a dude streaking wide open down the field and Jordan doesn't see him because Jordan is focused on his first or second progression, whereas Tate will actually scan the field. I saw that on Saturday where he's actually looking. You see his body and his head adjust to all the different progressions that he's got. So you're probably going to get more so of that. If the offensive line can hold up, you know, against Florida, you know, I think you'll be able to see him carve up that defense. I mean, I know we're not doing the forward preview, and we'll talk about this during the Florida preview, but that defense gave up 1.1 million yards to LSU. Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous.
700 and something yards.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was crazy.
That's unheard of.
That's unheard of. And so you imagine that if Tate can get time, and we're not asking for 10 seconds, but if Tate can get 3 seconds, three full seconds to scan the field to see what's out there, he's going to carve up that defense for sure, because he's going to be able to get the ball there quicker than Jordan could have got it there. He's going to be able to drop dimes, you know, sometimes a little bit better than Jordan could have done that as well. And he sees the field better. It's his whole pocket presence that you worry about. And so you're going to have to try to establish the run game. You're going to have to use some max protects if you're going to need a play that needs to develop across, you know, if you're running into those mesh concepts or those deep ends or deep out routes, you're going to need max protect. The one thing I wanted to you said, I just wanted to, Tate actually started the Jacksonville State game during the 2020 season. Mm. James Blackman was struggling. Remember, they just got blown out by Miami. And so they actually started Tate. He was in there for like several drives, threw a pick, and then they replaced him again. So, yeah. They brought Jordan Travis in to win the game. So, so he's had that. That's the only starting experience he's had. Everything else, he's coming either on cleanup or because of injury. So to have a whole week, this is Tate's chance to prove that, you know, him being a freshman in 2020, obviously, was him being a freshman. This is 4 years now. He's had four years in this system. So while he may not have command of it because he hasn't played it, he's been in the system. He knows those plays. He knows what he can and can't do. And I trust that Mike will figure that out and put him in the most optimal situation to be successful. I think I said this to you in the pre-show, but if I'm Mike Norvell, you know, it's the age old adage of when the backup quarterback's going to start, give him some easy plays, give him some plays where it's a rollout. It's an easy read, you know, maybe the first 16 to 20 scripted plays are easy reads for him. You know, he's got one read and he takes off. He's got one read or it's a handoff. He's got a RPO, which he's really good at. Man, he puts those balls really well. So just one read stuff. And then as the game progresses, as you develop space in the score, you know, hopefully you're scoring, then you start throwing in some of those complicated reads where he's got to read the option routes or he's got to read the defense and what they're giving him. Florida is going to give you a Santa's bag worth of open wide receivers. You just got to make sure he can see that and he's got time to get it.
Yeah, I think the thing that you mentioned that's big that makes you feel good about Tate is it's not like you're bringing in Brock Glenn, who you feel is a very high ceiling, talented young quarterback. Right. But you have a guy that's been here for a few years. Right. Like you mentioned, he knows what he's capable of. And almost as importantly, Mike Norvell knows what his strengths are. So you can tailor the game plan to them. And sometimes when you have to make a change, I'm sure he was probably planning on playing a lot in that game anyway.
Right.
But now you can full on tailor your offense to what he's good at, and you give him that full week as a starter to prepare and to get those reps with the ones. And like you said, I think a lot of it is getting him in rhythm, getting his confidence going. Because like we said, once he settles in, Tate's a good quarterback. I mean, that game against Louisville. Now, I understand a lot of that had to do with whoever was the defensive coordinator at the time thought it was a good idea to just leave Johnny in one-on-one coverage with no help. And they ate it up all night. But the point is, you had a mismatch, but Tate made the throws to take advantage of the mismatch. So to me, that's why, like, if you can dial those things up for Tate, he can make those throws. But this is where you need those guys. You need Johnny. You need Keon. You need Jaheim Bell. You need all these guys to step up right now because – you know, you may have a situation in the past where Jordan helps accentuate the talents of these receivers.
Right.
Well, now you need those receivers to step up with their talents to accentuate what Tate does well. And, you know, Tate, again, like we're talking about, he's a mobile guy. He can move the pocket to avoid pressure. It's not like he's just standing. It's not like Riley Leonard in the Duke game where he's injured and he's just standing back there doing what he can before he gets hit. He can move. Yeah. But you need those guys. You need dominant receivers. Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman, all these guys, to step up and help Tate out. Because we talked about this, you know, when we talk about like the playoff picture and how Florida State fits into things, and we'll get into that next. But Ohio State's quarterback, like, what's his name? I don't know, because he's not anything special. But he has Marvin Harrison Jr., so obviously he looks good. Well, the thing is that I tweeted out during the game after Jordan went down, I was like, guys, let's give Tate a chance. Like, Tate is also going to benefit from having better receivers, from having better tight ends. He's going to benefit from those weapons as well. So it's not like, you know, last year maybe you're a little worried because you don't quite have the weapons, but Tate's going to do better with those guys too. So if they can step up, you know, a lot of the passes that we throw are kind of jump balls, and you know, as long as you can get it there, those receivers
can get it there.
Like, it doesn't matter who puts the ball there, as long as you go up and get it. So I think Tate can have that success. You know, again, I just think that Tate, the biggest drawback is you just hope that he can remain calm, not fold under pressure until he gets comfortable, because this is going to be new to him and he's going to go into the swamp. It's sold out next week. I've already seen that. It's going to be a loud crowd. They're going to be itching to try and upset your season. But you never want to see this happen. You never want to see these types of injuries happen, of course. But I think you kind of have to say that this might have been the best timing that you could ask for.
Yeah.
To where if it was going to happen, you were able to get him some significant playing time against North Alabama and get him some confidence. Then you go into the Florida game, who their defense, I was looking it up earlier, they're right around 90th in passing, rushing, and scoring defense. So you're not going against like Clemson next week. You're not going against, you know, you're feeding him to the teeth of a dominant defense. He can get in rhythm. Like, he can have a good game next week to get him some confidence before you go play Louisville. And that's why I also think some people were upset that they pulled Tate a little early in that game to put in Brock Glenn. But my counter to that is, you guys got like the people, and not everybody feels that way. A lot of people understand this, but people have to understand, you lost Jordan in one play. You could lose Tate in one play. As much as you want to give Tate all the experience you get, I wish we could have played triple, quadruple overtime in that game just to keep getting experience before the Florida game. But you now have to develop a backup quarterback, because Tate is now not your backup anymore. You know, you don't have Sean McGuire back there hanging out anymore. Like, you have to develop that guy. And if something happens, you don't want Brock Glenn just going in completely out of nowhere with no experience. You know, you have to treat that now as you have to groom your quarterback too. Correct. You have to get him some opportunities when you can. I mean, he looks good, but you still want that experienced guy running the offense with Tate, because you could see some of the freshman things going on there with Brock Glenn. But he's got a really high ceiling, but you got to get him some snaps. You got to start developing him, because you don't want him to come off the bench against Louisville or you know, in the playoffs or something like that with no experience. But yeah, man, I feel like Tate can get it done. You just got to have everybody around him step up. Everybody has to rally to not make Tate have to go out there and win the game. Let him get comfortable, like you said, with some early throws. The defense has to be dominant. Florida's going to have a backup quarterback too. So
that's right.
You know, again, it's a terrible thing to happen, but you feel like maybe this was the best timing for it to happen. And then if you get past Florida and you get past Louisville, this is something we were talking about in a pre-show, you now have a month pending you make the playoffs, or you know, you're probably going to be a New Year's Six bowl game later. It's not going to be an early December bowl game.
Right.
You now have a month or so to prepare Tate as the starter. So you feel good about, hopefully it's a playoff game, you feel good about that too. And that's why I feel like when you talk about where does Florida State fit into the national picture, obviously you have to start by beating Florida. That's ever important.
Yeah.
Not only could it be sweet that you beat Florida, you win a rivalry, you also would deny them bowl eligibility. That would be super sweet too.
Yep.
But I think now you really want Louisville to win against Kentucky on Saturday, because they will come into the ACC championship as a top 10 team at that point. And, you know, we saw a lot of people took the bait on it. I tried to just completely ignore it. I almost turned the TV off because it was starting to get on my nerves. You know, they spent like 10 minutes on game day talking about why a one-loss team should make it in over an undefeated Florida State. And that was with Jordan Travis. Now that you have a backup quarterback, you could really see a lot of the politicking and stuff for some funny business to happen. But I feel like if Florida State can go out and beat Florida in the Swamp, I know Florida's not any good, but you're talking about a rivalry game on the road, your first real game as a starter with a backup quarterback, well, your starting quarterback now, but Tate. And then you're able to go into the ACC championship in a neutral site location and beat a top 10 Louisville.
Yep.
It at least could show the committee, like, we can win with Jordan Travis. Of course, you know, we miss him as our starting quarterback, but we can still go out and win games. We still have a top 10 win with Tate Rodemaker at quarterback. So I think the next two games are going to be vitally important because, you know, Michael, I'm going to be honest, man, I'm fully prepared to be dropped to number 5.
Yep.
I think when you look at just trailing 13-0 against the FCS team, when you had Jordan, it does, like, take the Jordan situation out of the equation. You play like crap against an FCS team for the first quarter. And so like, that doesn't look good when you have Washington, who still went out and beat, I know it was only by 2 points, but they beat a ranked team.
Right.
Now, it helps that you had Michigan struggle against a 6-5 Maryland team. So if they lose to Ohio State, they're probably out. And so, yeah, man, I think that just getting two wins, when you talk about a playoff-minded picture here, to be able to go to the committee and say, we beat Florida on the road in the Swamp in a rivalry game. We beat a top 10 Louisville team. We deserve to be in. It's a body of work that's throughout the whole season. This is not a one-man sport. Like, this is the entire team. This team has earned it. Yeah, you lose your Heisman hopeful quarterback. That stinks as many ways as it can stink. But you still have Keon Coleman. You still have Johnny Wilson. You still have a defense that has been dominant at times. You still have running back, a stable of running back. So, to me, I fully expect to be pushed down to number five, but I still think you just win the next two and you're going to be in. I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah. I was thinking about this and I think I've resigned to the fact that we're going to get pushed down to five. Listen, the committee has precedent of punishing a team when they lose their starting quarterback. I mean, look at Tennessee, even though they were a one loss team, they had Hendon Hooker. They were in that top. And then when he got hurt, they pushed him out, I think down to like eight or something like that. Ohio State got pushed out when JT, Barrett, when he got hurt, they pushed him down. But then somehow they got back in it and then they ended up winning a national title with a third string quarterback, Cardale Jones. So, you know, they have precedence for doing that. I also, you know, watch Washington, and yes, Oregon State was ranked, I think, 11 at the time, but Washington literally trailed most of the game and then did not score in the second half.
Yeah. So, I mean, Washington really, and that's the thing, man, is when you talk about like Michigan struggled against a 6-5 Maryland team, like no one, now, let's be honest, Georgia has absolutely flipped the switch. As much as it pains me to say it, they look like the Georgia of old. They look like they're going to be a problem when you get into the playoffs. We'll talk about, we'll cross that bridge when it gets here. But, you know, you already saw us drop to number five in AP poll.
Yep.
So, like, you can see the setup coming. I think you bring up a good point when you talk about the Ohio State team. They at least paved the roadway to say that just because you lost JT Barrett was a great quarterback, but it's like, you know, you lose a really good quarterback, but you're able to win with your third string. And so now, of course, they leaned on Zeke, and you know, you hope that our running backs can really just flip a switch too and get things going. But they at least paved the way to show that a team can overcome the loss of their quarterback and still go on to win a national championship. And so I feel like my rooting interest, we talked about this pre-show, I feel like my rooting interest has changed a little bit here. So I always asked for chaos at the top. Honestly, at this point, I kind of hope Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship. I hope Washington eliminates Oregon in the Pac-12 championship. If Texas could lose in the Big 12 championship, that would be great too. Because at that point, I feel like you kind of clear the litter out of the street when you talk about Florida State's path to the playoffs. You now get the next two or three one-loss teams that everybody's making this ridiculous case for to jump Florida State, who as an undefeated ACC champion, into the playoffs. Yep. You now push them out of the way. Like I think it comes down to, and this is something they talked about on game day, Florida State, Texas, Oregon, Alabama. Those are your three that are kind of like really sandwiched there together. Who's the best team? And that was with Jordan. So now you talk about without Jordan. But if you hand Bama a second loss, if you hand Oregon a second loss, they're both out. And Texas still, you know, Alabama losing again would hurt their strength of schedule. But if Texas were to sustain a loss, then I still, and even if they don't, I think if Bama and Oregon lose, I think you feel a lot better about the path being cleared for you.
Yeah.
Because, man, I could just see some real funny business by this committee. I think you have enough people rallying for Florida State to make it in. And, I at least have to say this. Regardless of what happens with the committee, regardless of where we end up, today, tomorrow, next week, whatever. I know Oregon Ohio State, Michigan are going to play on Saturday. We're going to find out how things shake out. So just win and worry about that when the time gets here. But, man, if you can still just go in and beat Florida and have an undefeated regular season, and then you can go and beat Louisville and win the ACC championship. Like, if you can do those two things, and let's just say hypothetically, and, like, trust me, we're breaking out the pitchforks if we get left out as a 13-0 ACC champion. Like,
you better believe it.
We're coming for old Boo. But at the same time, man, like, if you were to go undefeated 13-0, win the ACC, and then say you make the Orange Bowl, that's where you end up. You're going to feel like you always wondered what could have happened. Like we talked about with Hammond, the COVID season and the basketball team. That's still a daggone good season to be proud of, because you know you now have the asterisk. And, of course, I think a lot of the next two games, too, is how Tate plays.
Right.
When you talk about the committee, if Tate goes, you know, and throws for 300 yards against Florida or something like that, and you're going to be like, oh, okay, this guy's pretty good.
Right.
there's still a lot that you can accomplish, even if you were to go into the playoffs and lose or something like that. And again, I know we're feeling confident that Florida State's going to get the job done because everybody's going to rally around them and they're going to play inspired football. But man, I just don't want people to be like, the season's over or whatnot. Like you still have a great season so far. You still have a lot to play for. If you can get past Florida and you can win the ACC, that's what we said in the beginning of the season. That was your A1, number one goal was winning the ACC and beating your rivals and all that stuff. So that is still very much on the table, no matter what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Or if you even make it to the playoffs.
Right. Like, so I'll put it in these two perspectives of this way. Number one is Florida State is 11-0. If they go into Gainesville and they beat Gainesville or they beat Florida in Gainesville and they win and they go to Charlotte and they beat Louisville for the ACC championship, they have every right to be in the college football playoffs, regardless of what the committee thinks. They have every right to be there. They deserve it. They earn it, regardless if Jordan Travis played or not. They should be there. That's why they've been in the top four all season. They should not be punished because they're Heisman hopeful quarterback got injured and their backup came in and led them to an undefeated season because they still did it. They still did the thing, right?
Yep.
You know, yes, you look at Washington and you say, well, Washington beat Oregon and Washington has been playing ranked teams and all that stuff and winning, continue to win. But yeah, but if you're going by is Washington a better team than Florida State? I would argue they're still not a better team than Florida State. Mm-hmm. Even with Tate Rodemaker playing the game, I still wouldn't wager that Florida State would beat them. Why? Because they haven't played a decent defense all season at all. And look what Florida State did to the very likely Heisman winner in JT Daniels. I mean, did I say JT Daniels?
Yeah. Jaden Daniels.
Look what Florida State did to him.
You have JT Barrett and Jaden Daniels
mixed up together. But look what Florida State did to him. Yeah. It's the only, not even Alabama could shut him down. But Florida State did for more than a quarter or more than a half, I mean.
Yep.
And so, that's why I have so much confidence that Florida State could beat a Washington, even with Tate at quarterback. So I have confidence that Florida State could hang and probably even beat a Michigan with Tate at quarterback. So I have confidence that Florida State could hang and beat Ohio State with Tate at quarterback. Now, when we talk about Bama, listen, Bama's done turn a switch on. You've already said this.
Georgia, yeah.
They're going to kill everybody they play. It's whatever it is, right? But I think the other three, for sure, Florida State can hang and even beat those teams. They deserve to be in the playoff. My other point, though, you got to beat Florida. Because if you don't beat Florida, if you don't beat Louisville, none of it matters. We've been saying this all season long. Yep. None of it matters. You have to go undefeated. And so for us Florida State fans, I told you this in the pre-show, Jesse. If we're being real, because you and I, we dismiss the 2020 season. That's not that was just no coach walking into that situation would have had any success. Okay. So if you go to the 21 season, we're 5-7, right? You go to last year, we probably should have been an 8-4, maybe 9-3 team, but we end up being 10-3, which is incredible. Awesome. And now look, we're 11-0 with a chance to go down to Gainesville, have only the third regular season, undefeated season in Florida State history.
Okay? Which, by the way, Florida has been playing football for, I think it's 121 years, never had an undefeated season ever.
Ever. We're going for our third regular season undefeated season, right? Okay. We have a chance. If you would have told us that 3 years ago, moving the COVID season, we'd have been like, oh my gosh, he's ahead of schedule. He is ahead of schedule. So like you said, you're always going to wonder, man, if we get left out of the college football playoff, you know, we'll be at Boo's house hanging out with him, asking him all those questions. Or if we lose a game and we don't get in, you always wonder what if. Yeah, but sure. But man, we're ahead of schedule. We are ahead of schedule. Let's sit back. Let's take a deep breath and say, okay, you know what? We're going to be just like the players. We're going to rally around Tate. We're going to support Tate. We're going to support this team. We're going to show up to Florida. We're going to take over that trash of a stadium. And we're going to win. We're just going to win. I told Jesse this, Plant the Spirit Nation, hear me now. And I will have egg on my face if I'm wrong. Florida State is going 4-0 starting this weekend. And so if you do the math, what 4-0 means, I'm not going to say it out loud. You know what it means. Florida State is going 4-0.
You just got to win four games, and one of them is against a 5-6 team. One of them is against a team that, you know, Louisville has some bright spots, but man, they'd struggle against some bad teams. And so you feel like you can beat Louisville, especially in a neutral site stadium. Yep. And, you know, when you talk about Florida State as a whole, again, yeah, you lose Jordan, but even when you get past the offense and you get past the defense, like, I don't even want to say it, but you've had good special teams this year. We'll leave it at that. Like, from punting to kicking to all these, like, all three phases for Florida State has been really good this year. The coaching has been good this year. So I think they really do deserve it. I don't think they're going to get left out. It's just, man, like, you felt like they were looking for a reason, and then you go to the backup. But again, I you talk about the two games. You have a really good opportunity to come out and say, we beat Florida in a rivalry game in the Swamp. Everybody beats Florida, so who cares? But you still, it's a rivalry game. You know, you go down there and you do that. And then you could potentially get a top 10 win against Louisville to really strengthen your resume towards the end. So I think it's just really important to take this one game at a time, to continue to support this program, to continue to have faith in this team, let them work, let them prepare. You know, you've seen the players rallying around Jordan, the videos coming out of his hospital room. Jordan's going to be back, getting tape prepped. He's going to be, I'm sure he's going to be on the sideline. I don't know about Florida, you know, if he's got to have any surgery or anything like that, but I'm sure he'll probably be in Charlotte. I'm sure he'll be at whatever postseason game that we play in. So you just gotta keep the faith, man. You just really got to keep the faith, because Tate he's been around for a while. He's got a good arm. You just got to hope for the best, man. They've earned it with more. You know, there's been times where this offense has been clunky, and it was the defense that carried the day. So if those guys can show up and show out, and they can carry the day, and we can get the run game going, and those receivers that you have, the two dominant guys, and the tight ends that you have, if all those guys can step up, like you said, I don't see why Florida State can't go 4-0. You know, I worry about Georgia. You know what I mean? I just worry about Georgia strictly from a line of scrimmage perspective. Yeah. That's what I worry about. I don't know if we can block Georgia, but we're not playing Georgia this week. We're only playing Florida. So that's all you got to focus on.
All you got to focus on.
And the good thing is, man, you're already locked in the ACC championship. So, like, no matter what happens Saturday, you still have an extra game this season. You still get that opportunity to put a trophy in the hardware case. You know, something Miami hasn't done in 2 decades. So, like, you still have an opportunity to have a better season than they have in 20 years. So, and I will tell you guys, like, if you're coming up to Charlotte for that ACC title game, you better go hit up our sponsor, Alumni Hall, and grab some cold weather gear. It's freaking cold here. I mean, it's like in the 30s. The weather is always terrible for that game. It's always cold. It's always raining. The last time we were there, I think it was 2014 when we were there. It was so cold that we had brought like a grill and all this stuff to tailgate with. And we just ended up dumping the whole bag of charcoal in there, lighting it on fire. We were just standing around, like, trying to stay warm. The security guard from the parking lot was over there trying to stay warm. It was so miserably cold and wet that day. But you guys go hit up Alumni Hall, get you some cold weather gear before you come up to Charlotte so you don't freeze your tail off. Get it at a great price. With code SPEAR, you get 10% off in-store or online, 1817 Thomasville Road, alumnihall.com. Hit those guys up. And that's going to pretty much be it, Michael. I think our heart breaks for Jordan at the end of the day. Our heart breaks for Jordan. Our heart breaks for his family and just the way that his career came to an end at Florida State. But you just really have to step back and be appreciative for who he is as a person, as a player, the impact that he had on this university.
Yeah.
You know, just the likable, humble guy that he was. And you just cannot say enough about what Jordan Travis has done for Florida State. But now you have to turn your focus to, we still got games to play. And Jordan is the number one person who understands that more than anybody else, that, you know, this doesn't take a break for an injury. We'd love to have him back, but you got to get ready. And you got one of the biggest games of the season this Saturday against Florida. So, man, you just got to get ready and you got to roll with what you got. It's next man up. That's always the way it has been. That's always the way it will be. And, you know, it's time for Tate. It's Tate time. And that's the thing. Like, we're going to find out a lot about 2024. Like, this has been one of the things, you know, when you play an FCS team, a lot of people talk about different topics on social media. You know, when you're not really focused on North Alabama, which apparently the team wasn't that focused on them either.
Right?
But, like, one of the biggest conversations this week was, do you need a portal quarterback in 24? Well, you're going to find out real quick, because you're going to have Tate. You're going to give him a couple games here to see if this is a guy that you feel like you can roll with next year or not. And so it's sink or swim time for Tate. And man, I feel good about it. Like I obviously he's not Jordan. He doesn't have the command of the offense. He doesn't have the experience in the big games and things, but you know, all you can do is rally around him and have everybody else rally around him on the team and just cheer as loud as you can and hope for the best.
Right. Right. Exactly. And just think about the fact that like the season's not done. Jordan posted on the Instagram or whatever it was, like, we're not done yet. Season's not finished. It's not over. We got work to do, man. We got a game. We got to go down and beat the Gators. Then we got to go to Charlotte and beat Louisville. And then we got to play the first game of the college football playoffs, win that. And then we got to play in that next game and win that. And if we do those four things, we'll look back and say, what a galvanizing moment that was. Look what it did. Okay.
Yep.
You can't go 4-0 without going 1-0. And 1-0 starts this weekend in Gainesville.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. I 100% agree. And, you know, hey, if we go out and win a national championship with the backup at quarterback, you might want to mute me on social media for a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, you might want to mute all of us on social media.
Right. So FSU
Twitter will be
we're dunking on everybody if that happens. But, you know, like we said, one game at a time, go down, beat Florida, snatch bowl eligibility out of the jaws of the Gators. Yes. That would be even sweeter.
Yes.
So, yeah, man, just really excited for Saturday. We'll be back with you guys on Wednesday for a Florida preview. Who knows what's going to happen? You got two backup quarterbacks. Florida's with a backup quarterback. Florida State's with a backup quarterback. So we're going to have to kind of get some things figured out here. But we'll be back with you guys on Wednesday. As always, again, one more time before we get out of here, guys. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for the support that you showed me over the last week. I'm excited to be back in it. We're going to have multiple shows this week. We're going to get back on the content train. So excited for that. But as we get out of here, thank you guys for watching. Thank you for your support. Prayers up to Jordan for a speedy recovery. And as always, Go Noles.
Go Noles.